Good Friday. Today is June the 27th, and you're listening to My Farm. We're going to take a look out in the backyard and garden and talk about buckeye and horse chestnut trees and some of the problems we may be seeing with what looks like scorched or damaged leaves on those. We're also going to take a look at some weather impacts from the spring. All that after this message from our sponsor.
Sponsored by Seed Consultants. Simply the best value in the seed industry. Learn more at seedconsultants.com.
We're going to take some time this Friday morning after we have come through a very hot and humid week by far and take a look at some trees, horse chestnuts and buckeyes in particular, as some folks may see in different parts of the state blotching on the leaves. Now, symptoms begin to develop sometimes this time of year. It's a disease produced by a fungus commonly found on buckeyes and horse chestnuts early in the season, and it can continue on. But upon closer look, you may find that it's not a fungus at all. There's also potentially issues with leaf tissue damage from a leaf miner, not the fungus itself. The true culprit may be a native leaf mining moth mining just below the upper leaf epidermis, and so that material is actually becoming exposed. It's commonly associated with moths belonging to a specific family. These and other small moths are called Mycolepidoptera, which is not a taxonomic group, but a nod to their size. Now, it's important not to get this confused with the horse chestnut leaf mining moth that is making its way across Europe. That leaf miner has been found on other members of that family in Europe, as well as on silver maples in Belarus. But the origins of the horse chestnut leaf mining moth continue to be investigated, but it appears to remain confined to Europe and has not been found yet in North America. So that's not necessarily what we are talking about compared to this other leaf mining moth. Now, of course, we know that leaf blotch symptoms produced by leaf mining caterpillars, as well as the fungus, can occur actually on the same leaflet. So mixed messages are actually sent when you're trying to diagnose, because some will look like insect damage, some look like fungal damage, and the answer to both is yes, that's exactly what is going on. You had two things occurring on that same leaflet. Now, to distinguish between the two, you need to really take an in-depth look at what the symptoms are. The fungal pathogen, for example, affects all layers of the leaf from the upper epidermis to the lower epidermis, so the necrosis is evident on both sides of those leaflets. The lesions are initially small, reddish-brown, and often bonded by the leaf veins. As the summer progresses, then those lesions will expand to become large, dark brown blotches. Heavily infested trees may also appear scorched as those brown leaf blotches envelop the entire leaflet. Now, if we're talking about the insects, that leaf mining moth caterpillar feeds just below the upper leaf epidermis. That's why you may not see it going all the way through. There's little evidence on the underside of those leaflets of the leaf mining activity. Now, if you are, you can carefully remove that paper-thin upper epidermis covering the blotch mines, and you'll see an unusual-looking leaf mining moth caterpillar. Those leaf mines commonly contain silk filaments that point to a caterpillar rather than a beetle, or maybe a midge fly is another culprit. Another common feature of the leaf mines produced by this and other Mycolepidopteran leaf miners is the occurrence of circular structures within those leaf mines. The structures may be pupation chambers used for those purposes of pupating the young. These structures are very apparent in the mines of poison ivy leaf mining moths, something you probably don't want to investigate too closely. Now, although the leaf mines produced by the moth caterpillar are readily apparent, they've never seen damage rise to a level that would threaten the overall health of the tree, so it's more of an oddity rather than a serious pest, and more just an aesthetic problem rather than a health problem. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more after this message from our sponsor.
Williamson Crop Insurance, home of Decision Max. Decision Max allows you a simple solution to analyze your operation and make informed marketing and crop insurance decisions to mitigate your risks. Manage your whole operation in one place with the ability to blend counties, marketing, and insurance coverage to give a complete overview of your operation. Williamson Crop Insurance, protecting the Eastern Corn Belt since 1980. Learn more at cropcoverage.com.
Thanks, Joe. We're going to change directions now, talk about the weather. You know, we've only been in summer for a week officially, but it sure feels like it was a lot longer with that hot, humid weather. But we want to look at some of the weather trends associated with the meteorological spring that has now passed, now that we are into meteorological summer. USDA's Rod Bain has more.
Arrival of the summer solstice means the books are closed for astronomical spring 2025. Meteorological spring, however, concluded once the calendar turned from May to June. So regarding a recap of weather from a meteorological spring perspective, USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey points out,
it was the nation's second warmest spring on record, 24th wettest.
Regarding this spring's warm temperatures,
an average temperature of a little over 54 degrees was more than 3 degrees above the 20th century mean and ranks only behind the spring of 2012 in terms of warmest on record for the lower 48 states over the last 131 years, dropping to third place, 1910, which was, of course, before anyone was around, but a memorably warm spring a long time ago.
Rippey says that warmth was concentrated across several states and regions.
We had top 10 warmth in Montana and Nebraska across the Great Plains. Top 10 warmth also extended to the south and included Texas, Arkansas, and Louisiana. And then the warmth also moving right on through the Gulf Coast states and up the Atlantic seaboard. All those states also ranking in their top 10 warmest springs.
Needless to say, cool weather discussion for this spring was limited. As an example,
Arizona did come up on that list as the coolest state, but even there, it was still the 26th warmest. So it's way into the upper part of the distribution. No state was in the lower half or the cool half of that spring historical distribution.
As for the range of precipitation this past meteorological spring across the country,
there was some dryness in the west, 27th driest spring in Colorado, 28th in Idaho. But then as you move eastward, it was a top 10 wet spring in states like Oklahoma, Kentucky, and then several eastern states, including Delaware, Vermont, Massachusetts, and New Hampshire.
The month of May, weather-wise across the country, had some highlightable weather.
It was overall a warm, wet May, 26th warmest and 13th wettest on record.
With weather highlights on a state perspective, including,
it was the wettest on record in Alabama. That wetness extended pretty broadly to 12 other states, mostly in the southern and eastern part of the U.S. And briefly, in terms of temperatures, we saw a range from the 36th coolest May in Oklahoma, Florida, and California, both ranking in the top 10 for May heat.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Thanks, Rod. That's what's making agricultural news on my farm. For my 102.7 WMYW, I'm Dusty Sonnenberg. You have a great weekend.